threads of code in the cell, loops in the helix where the folded letters dwell. Hold it to.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Absolutely, thrilled to be here.
So I want you to imagine for a second that you are driving down a perfectly smooth, high-speed highway. You're just cruising along, you know, everything is flowing seamlessly.
Right, a nice clear road.
Exactly. And this highway represents your DNA. The cars are all the microscopic machinery that's constantly reading and replicating your genetic code.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly you hit this spot where the asphalt itself has somehow like tied itself into a complex four-way knot.
Oh man.
Right? The traffic violently slams on the brakes, total chaos. And in our genome, these microscopic roadblocks, they actually form naturally all the time.
They really do, yeah.
But the wild part is, what if we could actually weaponize these knots? Like, what if we could lock those roadblocks in place to intentionally crash cancer cells?
It is, it's a truly remarkable concept to consider. In biology, the equivalent of those intricate knots in the asphalt are called G quadruplexes or G4s.
Okay.
And they form in regions of our DNA that are exceptionally rich in a specific building block called guanine.
Right, the G in the genetic code.
Exactly, the G. And guanines possess this really unique chemical ability to stack onto each other. They hold the DNA into this highly stable four-stranded knot.
Wow.
Yeah, and it brings up exactly the question we're exploring in this deep dive today. How could stabilizing a temporary DNA knot actually change the way we treat some of the most stubborn blood cancers?
Today, we celebrate the work of the research team at the University of California, Davis, who advanced our understanding of how DNA's secondary structures can be targeted to fight B-cell cancers.
Yeah, and to really grasp the scale of what this team is looking at, we have to kind of rethink how we picture our genome.
How so?
Well, for a long time, textbooks trained us to think of DNA as just that classic, static, smooth double helix.
Like the spiral staircase.
Exactly. But the reality inside a living cell is incredibly dynamic. Across the human genome, researchers have mapped over 350,000 distinct sequences with the potential to fold into these G4 knots.
Wait. 350,000?
Yeah.
That's a lot of potential traffic jams.
It is. And they're not just scattered randomly either. We frequently find them clustered at regulatory regions, you know, the control switches that turn our genes on and off.
Ah, okay.
Now, in a normal, healthy cell, this is just standard operating procedure. We have specialized unwinding proteins known as helicases.
The bulldozers.
Yes. Think of them as microscopic bulldozers that drive just ahead of the replication machinery. They flatten out those G4 knots so the cell can copy its DNA and divide without a hitch.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I want to make sure we're getting the scale of this right and really understanding the mechanics.
Here.
It's almost like having a zipper on your jacket, and you hit a spot where the thread is just, I don't know, a little too thick.
That's a great analogy, yeah.
And if you're a healthy cell, you have the right tools, you give it a little wiggle, the bulldozer flattens the thread, and the zipper just keeps moving.
Mm-hmm. It's a minor nuisance.
Right.
Yeah.
But the stakes change when we look at cancer cells, especially B-cell cancers, or cells carrying mutations in their DNA repair genes, like the BRCA1 gene.
Exactly.
Now, most of us have heard of BRCA1 in the context of breast cancer, but its actual job is DNA repair, right?
That is the core function of BRCA1, yes. It's a critical player in a process called homologous recombination. It's basically how a cell flawlessly repairs a severed strand of DNA. When a cell loses that BRCA1 function through mutation, it loses its best mechanic.
Ouch.
Right? Now, apply that to a cancer cell. Cancer cells are hyperproliferative by nature. I mean, they are constantly trying to copy their DNA and divide as fast as biologically possible.
Right, they're stepping on the gas.
Exactly. So you have a cell driving at 100 miles an hour with a faulty steering wheel and absolutely no mechanic in the passenger seat.
That sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, it is. When their replication machinery hits one of these natural G4 knots, they just can't resolve it cleanly. The bulldozer is either missing or completely broken.
Wow.
And this creates a dangerous biological traffic jam that we call replication stress.
So the zipper gets completely hopelessly stuck.
Yep.
And if the replication machinery forces it, The physical tension just, rips the whole strand of DNA apart?
The structural integrity fails entirely, yeah. The DNA physically breaks right at the site of the knot.
Unbelievable.
This inherent genomic instability is a known hallmark of cancer. It drives its mutation rate, but the researchers at UC Davis recognized it as a glaring vulnerability.
Like using their own speed against them.
Precisely. If a cancer cell is already struggling to handle these natural roadblocks, applying pressure to that exact mechanism could push the cell over the edge into localized destruction.
Which naturally leads us to ask how scientists can actually study these invisible traffic jams. I mean, if you're listening to this deep dive right now, you might be wondering how you even look at a microscopic knot inside a living, breathing cell. You can't just put a regular magnifying glass up to a petri dish.
No, you really can't. You have to carefully engineer the right environment and use very specific chemical tools.
So what did they do?
The research team started with primary B cells from mice, and they used a comparative approach. Some cells were completely healthy, while others were genetically modified to lack that crucial BRCA1 repair gene.
Okay, setting up a control.
Right. And they also brought in a line of actively cancerous mouse lymphoma cells, known as CH12 cells.
Got it.
To weaponize the G4 knots in these specific cell populations, they exposed them to a small molecule called pyridostatin, or PDS for short.
So if PDS is introduced to the environment, it acts like a chemical superglue. Like the cell's natural bulldozers just scrape uselessly against it while the traffic piles up behind them.
Superglue gets the idea across, but to be a bit more precise, think of PDS as a highly targeted locking clamp.
A clamp?
Yeah, because it doesn't stick to the smooth, standard double helix highway at all. PDS is a specific ligand that only snaps shut when it detects the unique physical shape of a four-way G4 knot.
Oh, wow. So it ignores the rest of the DNA completely?
Completely. Once it binds, it stabilizes the knot, locking into place. It makes it virtually impossible for the helicase bulldozers to unwind the structure.
And then crash.
Exactly. The replication machinery crashes into this locked clamp at full speed, causing the DNA strand to snap.
Man. Okay, so we've locked the clamps, the cars are crashing, the DNA is breaking, but we still need to see the wreckage, right? How do researchers physically track a single DNA snap in a whole forest of chromosomes?
They visualized the damage using a really powerful molecular technique called FISHS.
Like the animal.
Like the animal, but it stands for fluorescence in situ hybridization.
Ah, of course it does.
Rather than looking at the whole cell blindly, you design specific molecular probes. These probes are essentially short pieces of synthetic DNA designed to seek out and bind only to certain matching regions of the chromosomes. And crucially, these probes carry a fluorescent tag.
Oh, so they glow.
Exactly. When you look through a specialized microscope, it allows you to physically paint specific chromosomes or even exact repetitive sequences in bright neon colors.
That is so cool.
It is. You can literally see the architecture of the chromosomes, and you can pinpoint exactly where they have been severed.
But the methodology didn't stop at just locking the knots and taking pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a brilliant, highly controlled step here.
There was, yeah.
They used a chemical inhibitor called RO3306, which blocks an enzyme known as CDK1. To put that in context, CDK1 is a master regulator of the cell cycle.
Mm-hmm.
By blocking it, the researchers essentially freeze the cells so they can only go through a single replication cycle and no further. But let me play devil's advocate for a second here.
Of course.
If our goal is to see how much damage this PDS clamp can do to a cancer cell, wait, why do we need to freeze them in one cycle? Shouldn't we just let them divide freely and watch the chaos unfold?
That instinct makes total sense, but it overlooks how cells react to trauma over time.
Okay.
If you allow a cell with newly broken DNA to divide freely, it enters a state of panic. Its internal alarms go off, and it tries to stitch those broken DNA pieces back together to survive the division process.
Desperation mode.
Exactly. But because the breaks are severe, it does so blindly. Over two or three divisions, you end up with a chaotic secondary mess of random fusions and rearrangements.
Oh, I see.
By using that CDK1 inhibitor to hit a hard pause button right before the cell divides, the researchers isolate the variables. They can separate the initial direct damage caused by the PDS clamp from the subsequent chaotic repair attempts that happen later.
Right. It allows us to look at the immediate car crash, rather than trying to decipher the mechanics of the crash by looking at a junkyard 3 weeks later where someone tried to weld like 5 broken cars back into one.
That is exactly right.
That distinction is vital. Okay, let's look at the initial crash. Let's unfreeze the cells and examine the sheer wreckage caused by this PDS clamp. where did the DNA actually snap? Because if there are 350,000 potential knots, the whole genome should be in tatters, right?
You would think so. The breaks were indeed massive, but they were not randomly distributed across the genome.
Really?
Yeah. When the researchers analyzed those fluorescent FIH images, the damage was remarkably concentrated in very specific, highly repetitive sequences.
Like where?
Specifically, they found severe fragmentation at the ribosomal DNA arrays and at regions known as the pericentromeric major satellite repeats.
Okay, let's break down that geography for the listener. The pericentromeric region, that's the area right next to the centromere, which is kind of like the pinched waist of the chromosome, right? It's the structural anchor.
That is the exact anatomical location, yeah. It's a dense, highly repetitive structural area. But the most revealing detail in the data is the sheer specificity of the damage.
How specific are we talking?
Well, while these major satellite regions just outside the centromere were absolutely shredded by the PDS treatment, the minor satellite regions, which are located right next door, forming the core of the actual centromere, they were completely spared.
Wait, completely?
The probes showed almost zero damage there.
Which raises a huge why. I mean, they are sitting right next to each other on the chromosome. Why does the clamp destroy the major satellite but ignore the minor satellite?
It all comes down to the fundamental sequence of the DNA letters in those regions.
Oh, the G4s.
Exactly. The minor satellites were spared simply because they lack the specific guanine-rich sequences required to fold into those G4 knots in the first place.
Wow.
Without the guanines, there are no knots. Without the knots, the PDS clamp has absolutely nothing to bind to.
So the cars just keep driving?
Yep. The replication machinery just cruises right through the minor satellites on smooth asphalt while slamming into a wall of locked knots just a few nanometers away in the major satellites.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When the DNA in these major satellite regions breaks, the cell doesn't just leave the ends flapping in the breeze, does it?
No, it tries to fix it.
The broken pericentromeric pieces frantically try to fuse back together to save themselves through a process called non-homologous end joining.
Mm-hmm.
It's a desperate, messy repair job. And because the breaks are happening right at the waist of the chromosome near the centromere, when they fuse, they create what I can only describe as Frankenstein chromosomes.
That's a great visual. The clinical term for these structures is dicentrics, or two-arm fusions.
Dicentrics, meaning two centromeres.
Exactly. To visualize why this is catastrophic, remember that a normal chromosome has exactly one centromere. That centromere acts as a single control center, a handle that the cell's spindle fibers grab onto when it's time to pull the duplicated chromosomes apart into two new identical cells.
Right.
But these frantic repair jobs created elongated chromosomes with two handles, two centromeres on a single strand.
Which sounds like a mechanical nightmare for cell division.
It is a total nightmare.
And as we'd expect, based on what we discussed earlier, the B cells missing that BRCA1 repair mechanic suffered significantly more of this Frankenstein damage than the healthy ones.
Correct.
But the researchers found a massive, surprising twist in this data. A complete shocker regarding the total number of chromosomes that resulted from this nightmare division.
Yes, we are talking about the phenomenon of tetraploidy.
Tetraploidy.
Right. A normal mouse cell contains 40 chromosomes. But when the researchers exposed the primary B cells to the PDS clamp, they observed a massive spike in cells that had become tetraploid, meaning they finished the process with double their normal genetic material.
So 80 chromosomes instead of 40.
Exactly. They ended up with around 80. However, the critical and somewhat puzzling detail here is that this tetraploidy did not happen in the cancerous CH12 lymphoma cells.
Wait, we have a major divergence in the biology here.
We do.
Why on earth is there such a drastic difference in the outcome between a normal primary B cell and a highly aggressive cancerous lymphoma cell when they both expose to the exact same DNA clamp?
This divergence highlights the really complex internal signaling of cell cycle regulation. It essentially comes down to how different cells utilize their emergency brakes.
The brakes again.
Right. When the CH12 lymphoma cells experience this massive clamp-induced DNA damage, their internal sensors recognize the severity of the threat.
Okay.
They immediately trigger what biologists call a G2M checkpoint arrest. The cell senses the shattered DNA, slams on the brakes, and actively refuses to enter mitosis.
Mitosis being the phase where the cell physically divides.
Exactly. They simply sit there in an arrested, frozen state.
But the primary B cells, for whatever reason, they just miss the memo. They don't respect the checkpoint.
They push right through. The primary cells attempt to execute a full division while still carrying those Frankenstein dicentric chromosomes.
Which is bad.
Very bad. Because just as you noted, having two centromeres is a structural nightmare. During division, the cell's machinery grabs both handles on the dicentric chromosome and tries to pull them to opposite sides of the cell.
Oh man, so the chromosome is literally being pulled in two directions at once.
Exactly. The physical tension stalls the entire division machinery. The cell gets completely stuck in the middle of dividing.
Like a tug of war that nobody wins?
Exactly. Eventually, after struggling, it undergoes a process known as mitotic slippage.
Slippage.
Yeah. It basically abandons the attempt to divide. The cell membrane that was trying to pinch into two separate cells just relaxes.
Wow.
And the two half-formed daughter cells merge back together into a single giant cell containing all the duplicated DNA.
Hence the jump from 40 to 80 chromosomes.
Exactly.
And the researchers actually proved this mechanical timeline using that single cycle freeze trick we talked about earlier with the CDK1 inhibitor.
They did, yeah.
When they forced the cells to stay in just a single cycle, they only saw the initial simple breaks. They didn't see the Frankenstein fusions, and they didn't see any giant tetraploid cells with 80 chromosomes.
Right.
It perfectly proved that the fusions and the giant cells are not direct results of the chemical clamp itself, but the inevitable consequence of a cell trying to perform multiple rounds of division with shattered DNA.
Spot on. It requires the mechanical act of division over multiple life cycles to build that level of cellular wreckage. The PDS just sets the trap.
Okay, so we have deeply unpacked the wreckage and the mechanisms in mouse cells. But if you are listening to this deep dive, you likely care most about what this means for human medicine.
Naturally.
Mice have different chromosomal architectures than we do. Do these vulnerabilities hold up when we apply this PDS clamp to human cells?
They do. The mechanism translates remarkably well across species. The research team moved their focus to human B cell lines to verify the vulnerability.
Okay, what did they find?
Well, they tested PDS on an immortalized human line called GM12878, and more importantly, on a Burkitt's lymphoma line called Raji.
Burkitt's lymphoma. That's a highly aggressive, fast-growing human B-cell non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Real-world stakes.
Very high stakes. And in both of these human lines, they observed the exact same pattern of extreme structural breakage localized in the pericentromeric regions.
Wow.
Yeah, the fundamental vulnerability of those G4 knots in repetitive DNA is deeply conserved in our biology.
That proves the target exists in humans.
Yeah.
But to me, the absolute most exciting data point from a clinical perspective came next.
Oh, absolutely.
They didn't just test human cancer lines. They took healthy human blood cells, PBMCs, or peripheral blood mononuclear cells.
Mm-hmm.
These are the immune cells circulating in your blood right now.
Mm.
And when they applied the PDS clamp to these healthy human cells, nothing happened. No chromosomal instability.
At all.
Even when they cranked the dose of the chemical up to highly toxic levels, the healthy human cells just absorbed it and kept functioning normally.
Yeah, and this specific finding represents the holy grail of oncology research, a wide therapeutic window.
It's incredible.
It suggests that PDS, or molecules like it, could act as a highly targeted systemic weapon. Because your healthy PBMCs aren't hyperproliferating, and because they generally possess fully intact DNA repair mechanisms, their replication machinery moves slowly enough to manage the temporary stabilization of G4 knots.
Right.
But the rapidly dividing Burkitt's lymphoma cells, driven by constant frantic replication stress, are absolutely shattered by the exact same dose.
That's a massive therapeutic window.
Yeah.
You're essentially saying, we could introduce a systemic drug that the healthy cells just shrug off as a minor inconvenience, while the cancer cells tear their own genomes apart trying to outrun it.
That is the hope, yes.
And it gets even more fascinating when we start thinking about drug combinations. You mentioned earlier that the CH12 lymphoma cells managed to survive the initial onslaught by hitting their emergency brakes, triggering that G2M checkpoint arrest to avoid dividing with broken DNA.
Right.
What if we cut those brake lines?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of clinical pharmacology, combining therapies is the next logical frontier. We currently have access to targeted drugs, such as WEE1 inhibitors, that are specifically designed to block those cell cycle checkpoints.
Okay, WEE1.
Yeah, WEE1 is an enzyme that helps enforce the G2M brake. If you combine a WEE1 inhibitor with the PDX clamp, you engineer a lethal, unavoidable trap for the cancer cell.
Let me make sure I understand the mechanics of that combination. The PDS locks the DNA knots, causing the massive chromosomal crashes.
Mm-hmm.
The cell senses the damage and tries to hit the brakes. But the WE1 inhibitor acts like a brick on the gas pedal.
Exactly.
The cell sensors are screaming that the genome is shattered, but WE1 overrides the emergency brakes, forcing the cell to divide anyway. It's fatal force division.
The synergy is exceptionally powerful. By removing the cancer cell's ability to arrest and repair, you force it into that catastrophic mitotic slippage we discussed. The result is total chromosomal chaos and ultimately cell death.
I have to push back critically on this point, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
We just celebrated how brilliantly lethal this force division is for cancer cells. But earlier, we explicitly detailed how pushing primary mouse cells through this exact same damage caused them to become tetraploid.
Yes, we did.
They turned into giant cells with 80 chromosomes. Hold on, earlier we said primary cells became tetraploid. Isn't tetraploidy a known stepping stone to creating cancer?
It is.
You're generating massive, genetically unstable cells. Aren't we risking planting the seeds for new tumors in the process of fighting the old ones?
This is a vital, critical distinction, and it represents the primary double-edged sword of this entire therapeutic approach.
Mm.
You have correctly identified the major limitation acknowledged in the study.
Right.
Tetraploidy is absolutely a recognized precursor to genomic instability and long-term tumorigenesis.
Right.
The inherent risk here is that while a G4 stabilizer like PDS might be incredibly effective at eradicating an established, rapidly dividing blood cancer today, its propensity to induce mitotic slippage and tetraploidy in surrounding non-target tissues could theoretically initiate secondary cancers years or even decades down the line.
So it's the ultimate delicate balance in oncology, weighing the benefit of eradicating the immediate lethal threat of lymphoma against the long-term statistical risk of generating new instability.
Precisely why in vitro studies experiments strictly conducted in isolated petri dishes are only the very beginning of the journey. The critical, non-negotiable next step for this research is in vivo study.
Right, animal models.
We urgently need to deploy these G4 stabilizers in whole living organisms. We must monitor these complex side effects over long periods.
Mm-hmm.
We need to observe whether a living immune system naturally detects and clears out those dangerous tetraploid cells, or if they manage to persist, evade detection, and become dangerously malignant.
So to bring all these complex threads together for you listening, by deploying targeted small molecules like pyridostatin to lock natural G-quadruplex DNA structures firmly in place, scientists can successfully induce catastrophic, highly localized DNA breaks at the centromeric regions of rapidly dividing lymphoma and BRCA-deficient cells.
Perfectly summarized.
While this unveils a potent, highly specific new vulnerability in cancer's armor, one that miraculously spares healthy human blood cells, the resulting chromosomal fusions and tetraploidy underscore the delicate biological balance between eradicating existing tumors and risking the creation of new ones.
And the underlying genomic mechanisms are beautiful in their complexity, but they serve as a stark reminder that the genome is highly reactive. Every single therapeutic pressure we apply triggers an evolutionary mechanical response from the cell. The goal is to ensure that response is terminal for the cancer.
What does this mean for the future of chemotherapy? Could we one day map a patient's specific genomic roadblocks to tailor therapies that force their unique cancer into an evolutionary dead end?
That is the hope we're all working toward.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Bright screens, late hours, threads of code in the cell. Loops in the helix where the folded letters dwell. Hold it too steady and the copy line slows. A stutter in the rhythm where the pressure grows. Parasyntromere like a drum that won't relent. Our DNA humming where the energy is spent. Replication meets a wall, then a sudden flash to clean ends in the dark. Double strand crash. T quad, hold tight and break, then break in the repeat. Much to take. Dicentric skyline, pulling both ways. If the break then break in the repeat in the heat. Too much to take from our DNA thunder to mass at haze.